I'm Dale Jampgard from Portland, Oregon. I work as a counselor in private practice and trained as a social worker and as a pastor. And I'm interested in all the different ways we can relate our faith to how we live life. And so that'll be kind of the theme running through all of my subjects. Today, however, what I'd like to explore with you is this whole issue of the power of touch. And where does touch fit in to our lives, and maybe does it have a place in our churches, and ways that we might at least consider that possibility. Come on in, plenty of seats, I think. Still have one over here. Or bring some from the other room if you'd like. There's usually plenty over there. When you think of touch, what are some of the things you think of?
Hugs.
Hugs?
Hugs.
Hugs.
Embrace.
Mm-hmm.
Affirmative comments.
Okay. Affirmative comments.
Feeling.
Emotion. Being touched.
Interesting. Silent bonding.
Okay. A bonding with another person. I'm going to repeat what you say so that these mics pick it up and put it on the tape. It's not that I don't hear you, but... Okay.
Connection. Not necessarily physical.
Let's say some more. What are you thinking of? Okay. So as we talked about touch, did we dare mention sex? Nope. We don't talk about that stuff here. The important gift of God is, notice how he designed us for touch. It's built into our very design to be in touch, to experience a deep sense of touch, and an aspect of that is sexual. And it's an important aspect of it. But it's not the total aspect. And so where we get in difficulty is when we assume that all touch is sexual. Then we're way off on that end, and if we got the all the way the other way, if we assumed all touch was non-sexual, then we're missing a big part of the boat. So it's recognizing that touch includes all kinds of messages, caring as you talked about it, contact, intimacy, being in touch, communication, all kinds of words, and it also can mean sexual. A way of bringing our whole system to an aliveness and acuteness that's possible through our sexualness and experiencing a kind of tremendous excitement and tremendous release. The tremendous healing power in the sexual experience, because we can reach the height of being alive and excited, and also the kind of very powerful release experience in the sexual. And all of it is God's gift. So we don't want to negate that. However, we recognize that we need limits around the sexual, and so we need to find ways, if we are going to involve ourselves in touch, that we do it with an understanding of what it means. And as you mentioned, sometimes when it's thought all touch is sexual, all of a sudden, then it's very uncomfortable when we have hug night. How did you react to the hugging at the Eucharist, or those of you who were here at the Eucharist service last night? What are some of the reactions you have?
I think it's easier there because we have permission, and everybody's, you know, at least for me, I feel like I know the intent of the people that are there is to share the peace of God in a physical way that we don't get directly from God to people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's easier there to touch because we have permission. We understand kind of the boundaries that we're in already.
Okay, so we've been able to give it certain meaning.
Mm-hmm.
More meaningful, more sharing.
Okay, that the hugs for you feel more meaningful than just saying the peace of the Lord or something to that effect. Yeah, okay. Please feel free to bring in some more chairs. We have in fact, I would suggest that you bring in chairs because what I'm going to have you do will involve using chairs. Okay. Now, yes.
I'm concerned about people who drive on Saturday or Sunday and haven't sort of had time to feel what the village has to offer in the sense of relationships that build. And I wonder if there's anyone who was here that came on Saturday or Sunday that had any reaction to that.
Was there some discomfort with the hugging?
I think it depends on what your local congregation yeah. does. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of hugging in our church, so it felt very natural.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but if your local parish never hugs,
yeah.
then all of a sudden you see everyone jumping up and running around hugging, and you, what's going on here? And it's kind of scary sometimes.
There are some people within our own congregation who really resent hugging, though.
Yes.
Most of the congregation is like last night, but there are some who it really bothers.
Yes. And we really need to be sensitive to that and not judgmental of that. Because
I think a lot of it is background, isn't it?
Yes, you're right on.
As a child, and it was
the way touch was used as a child may have shaped the whole way a person, and I've worked with people in counseling to just touch them, they get afraid. They experience the same fear they felt as a child if they were physically abused. Or if they were scared a lot as a child and were afraid that they would be hurt. So it's not a matter that everyone should touch. It's a matter that if we are in touch, we may express some of that through physical touch. But if we're in touch, we can also sense if a person is pulling away or uncomfortable and let go of the need to touch at that point and maybe shake hands or just look them in the eye or just touch them on the hands and look at them and grant the peace. But to have a real sensitivity to that, I think, is important because it's not a matter now that we all should touch.
I think what the lady said, that is what we grew up with. Having been a teacher of small children, I picked up on that early. Some liked it and they wanted you to, and some would hold back when you
yes.
want to give them a pat on the back.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of individual difference in children. In my own children, I have two that like to be, well, they're grown now, but, you know, enjoyed being held, cuddled, and like to be touched, and two that didn't really like it.
Yes.
You know, and you just sort of, okay, you don't push it on them, you give them a little pat or a little quick hug, and then you let them go. You know, and the other one wants to sit in your lap and sit there for half an hour and just be cuddled. So there was a lot of difference in individuals, evidently,
mm-hmm.
because I feel like I raised them the same way, or, you know, more or less the same way.
Yes, so there are differences. Also, there are differences in cultures. Some cultures are very touching cultures and others aren't, and ours is one that has difficulty with touching. And so I think part of an intent of a class like this is to explore what touch can mean to us and to begin to give ourselves more permission to use touch with the kind of meanings that it can have in our churches and in our own lives and our families. What then is the power of touch? In many ways we don't know, but a lot of the things that you've said already begin to point to it. To feel connected with another person, to feel another person is with you, to feel accepted, embraced, in touch with, sharing a space with another person without fear. Those are powerful things in terms of mobilizing our own ability, our immune system, our ability to maintain our well-being. Now, one of the difficulties of researching this is Who are we going to deprive to find out what the results of deprivation is? But there are examples. For instance, a little 2-year-old girl was brought into a Chicago hospital, and mother brought her in and said, "You take her. I don't want her anymore. I can't take it." And they said, "Well, what's happening?" And the mother said, "Well, I'm alone, and I've been trying to care for her and work, and what I've done is I've kept her in a back room where I've fed her, provided food for her, but no attention. I'm so busy in my own life that I haven't been able to spend time with her, and she just cries all the time, and so I don't want to have anything to do with her." And so the little girl looked at, I saw a movie of this, she looked like a little old lady. She was emaciated, no affect, she couldn't walk, she wanted no contact with people. It was just like gaunt. And what the hospital did was spent 8 weeks with substitute mothers taking time, and they would spend 6 to 8 hours a day with her and trying to make contact, and they didn't rush her right at first, and it shows this. They just sat with her and would reach out their hand, and if she was willing to touch them, she, you know, they had to build some connection, for this was a whole foreign thing for her now. And gradually the movie shows that as they were there with her and entered into her world, she began to trust and began to reach out and began to make contact and began to let them help her eat. Otherwise she would only eat herself, and then would let them hold her. And the movie documents then, over the 8-week period, she just begins to blossom. Eventually, by the 8th week, she is able to walk. She's reaching out for contact. There's affect in her face. She's responsive. Dramatic change. And the only treatment was touch and care. So we can postulate from that that we do need contact with people, and we need physical contact. And one of the ways of talking about that is to call it stroking. One of the systems that I like to use is TA, and it talks about strokes as being a unit of recognition, a way of recognizing a person, and that can be touch, and is important to be touch. So the theory is that if a child was fed and cared for in terms of meeting the basic needs, but was not touched, that child would shrivel up and die. That the spine needs the touch to stimulate the growth. Since we need that touch, the outgrowth of that is also very interesting. And that is that as a child, we need and want positive recognition and touch. However, if we cannot get the positive recognition and touch, we will find ways to get the negative. Have you seen your child do something deliberately to bug you? Like you see a little child take it. I actually saw my son do this. He looked at me and pushed his bowl of whatever it was off the high chair, just like this. Now what you gonna do, Dad? Children learn how to get negative attention, negative contact, when they don't feel like they're getting enough positive contact. And that then is the way we often develop our problems in life, because we use our problems to get negative attention. A husband comes into me and says, "Oh boy, I've got a wife that nags me all the time. Just nags and nags and nags all the time. What do you do about a wife that nags you all the time?" And my response to him is, "How do you get her to nag you?" It never occurred to him. And he begins to explore the ways that he evokes the nagging by his indecision or offering to do something and not doing it, or you know, different ways he sets up getting the reaction, and that's the way he gets his negative strokes or negative attention. And it's better to have negative attention than no attention at all. That's how important it is. Well, I liked what you said about different kinds of contact. One of the things that we've lost in our medical approach to healing has been the loss of touch in a lot of ways. And I just read recently a little anecdote. It talked about how much contact there was when the doctor needed to listen to your heart and didn't have a stethoscope. He had to get his ear right down on you and listen to your heart. And then we got the separation, the technology, and the stethoscope, so now he doesn't need to touch. He can listen to your heart without touching you. And a lot of our technology is like that, which has been a depersonalization, a lack of contact between doctor and patient. And it's taken something away. There is a program, and I'm grabbing for a name, and all of a sudden it isn't there. Therapeutic Touch. Does someone remember the name of? Okay. There was a professor at Columbia University who did a lot of research in terms of different forms of healing, and especially the importance of the laying on of hands in a lot of the shaman healing and native healing practices. Really emphasize, in Oriental healing, emphasize the laying on of hands in different ways. And she began to explore what touch would mean and has written a number of books now. One is called Therapeutic Touch. Dorothy Krippner. Anyway, Therapeutic Touch is not actually touching, but working with the energy of the body. It's moving your hand about an inch away from the body, and what she does is have people work with patients around areas that are diseased or ill or aching, painful, and just moving the hand in a gentle way about an inch from the body. And often there is a relaxation, and as the relaxation comes, the circulation improves, nerves respond, and the body begins to respond more positively. And she calls this process therapeutic touch and is teaching nurses to do this in hospitals. That actually, in some ways, was discovered by a Dr. Mesmer. Dr. Mesmer, a British surgeon, was in India, and he had a real problem. He couldn't get enough anesthetics, and he needed to do surgeries. And the problem was that the shock of the surgery was often the secondary complications of the surgery were so great that it took a long time to recover, and a lot of complications. And he discovered that if he would have a patient sit in a chair like this, and he would straddle them, and then run his hands down over their body like this, just do that for 20 minutes. Actually, what happened was their whole body went into a tremendous state of relaxation and a type of hypnotic state, and he was able to do surgery and with far less reaction, without anesthetics, and the recovery time was much more rapid, dramatic changes, healing was much more rapid. He was so excited about his discoveries, he went running back to England and said, "Look what I found!" And they listened to him and a number of other of his ideas, and then they ousted him from the AMA, or the BMA, or I guess it'd be the BMA. Anyway, so in some ways, touch has not fit our understanding that we have had of a medical model of how healing happens, and yet certainly we know Jesus laid hands on, and the early church emphasized the laying on of hands at the time of healing. That some contact somehow brings attention to a certain part of the body. and mobilizes the body in that direction. And that can be used by, I think, God's Spirit. I think it's also part of a natural healing that happens, but it also can be used by God's Spirit for healing. Let's explore a couple of things. First, an exercise that I like. I'd like to have you just reach out and touch something, anything around you. Just reach out and touch. Okay? Now take your hand back. Now I'd like to have you reach out and feel the same thing that you touched. And turn to someone near you and talk about what the difference was between those two experiences. How were the two experiences different? Okay, let's come back together, please. What are some of the things you noticed?
More detail.
When?
With feeling.
The second time? Okay.
I noticed some contrast, and we both had an experience of almost the opposite. Our initial experience, her with wood and me with metal, was that it was hard and cold, cool. And then when we felt it, it felt softer or smoother and almost warm.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, which do you think was more actual? Okay. See, my hunch is you had some preconceptions in your mind that is going to be cold or hard, and you, oh, yeah, okay, now I know it. See, we approach, when you touch something, you decide you have to do an action, but you've already decided most of what it is that's going to happen, and all you do is bump into something. When you moved your awareness from your doing out to your feeling, you interacted, you experienced what was there, you got acquainted. You say, oh, yeah, okay. Now, have you ever been hugged by someone that was going to touch you? It feels like a machine. Okay? And then have you been hugged by someone that wants to be with you? And you just notice the difference. That dynamic is so powerful in life because a lot of us go through life only touching. I often use it as Sunday school teachers. Are you there to teach ideas to these kids, or are you there to be with them and help them discover what it's all about? And the difference in that is a total different dynamic. And in touch, it'll be different. I'd like to have you pick up your things, move the chairs all the way back to the sides of the room, and let's experiment with some things. Okay, everyone stand, please. And now, this is going to be experiential, and let me say it at the beginning, you're free to not do anything you would rather not do, so, you know, pace yourself, don't feel like you have to do it just because I'm suggesting it. I'd like to have you space yourself all around the room, in other words, space out. Kind of get, that's the way. Good. Okay, and now close your eyes. Bring your awareness to your breathing.
and sense the rhythm in you, the pulsing of your own heart, the rhythm of activity, and have a sense that you're a part of a whole rhythm of the universe. Now, gently begin to twist and swing your arms, just expressing that kind of movement. Your movement is along with the movement that is happening in you and around you and throughout the whole universe. Just leave your hands, arms dangle at your sides and just swing them gently. Just relaxing and letting yourself swing. Being aware of the palms of your hands and your fingers. Okay, and now slowly bring your hands together until you feel some resistance between the palms of your hands. Flatten your hands a little. And start coming together until you feel something between the palms of your hands. No need to touch them. Just start them about a foot apart. Slowly bring them together until you have a sense that there is something there between your hands. And then begin to play with that something. See how far back apart you can begin to sense that. Make a ball of that. If that's energy there between your hands, begin to make a ball of it. And let the size of the ball grow. And now open your eyes and move to a partner and stand with your hands facing a partner like this. Begin to sense some connection. Okay, without touching, see what you sense. Decide to be A. Decide who's going to be A and who's going to be B. Okay? Your eyes can be open. Well, not for the next part, I'm going to want them closed. But now that you know who's going to be A and B. Okay, close your eyes. And now B, I want you to stand facing straight forward as you are. And A, I want you to pivot. Slowly pivot and feel what happens. Just pivot with your feet stationary and then come back and see if you can tell where your partner's hands are. Now swing back and see if you can tell. Okay, and now switch. A, stand still, and B, pivot. With your eyes closed, notice how it feels to pivot away and then pivot back and see if you can tell when you are in facing the hands. Now, each take a good large step backward. And repeat that exercise. B, remain stationary, and A, again, pivot until you have a sense that you are facing your partner.